Rosh Hashanah by Galler and our wonderful rabbinic team over here. It's such a real honor to be part of this beautiful night. We're going to assume that everyone is already experts in Kaddish, Orchatz, and Karpas. We're up to Yachatz. See? Sefer's moving along very, very nicely. We break the matzah to have this lechem oni, this poor man's bread in pieces, put the bigger half away for the afikomen. We recite halach ma'anya. This is the bread of affliction. The Gemara Maseches Pesachim says, Ma darko shel ani beprusa. A poor person isn't able to eat all that's in front of them. They don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. So they have to store even the majority of what they have left for later, just in case they don't get anything else later. They only could eat bits at a time, putting the bigger half away. I once heard Moshe Weinberger give a beautiful drasha on this idea of starting the Seder as aniyim. We are not just aniyim in an impoverished, indigent, monetary sense, but in terms of faith, in terms of amunah, we are poor. When people are enslaved, when they're not able to make autonomous decisions, they are poor, and they are not able to be trusting. To be trusting of someone else, to be vulnerable, to open yourself up, to trust in someone else to take care of you, requires a great rich sense of amunah. As recent slaves in this process, halach ma'anya, we are very poor. We can't trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take care of us yet. And therefore, we're going to put the bigger amount away for later. We eat just the minimum we have to eat now, not fully believing, not fully having that amunah, which is lach ma'ani at this point. Pour in our amunah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can take care of us. And then, over the course of the Seder, we're trying to leave that mindset, to actually go to Cheres, to stop being poor in our amunah, to build up a sense of trust, to build up a sense of faith, where we're no longer going to need to have food away in the closet, to have pas pasala. Just as the Kaddish Baruch Hu, when taking us out of Mitzrayim, we were very little fledglings in terms of our emunah in Hashem, mem tashari tuma, the Kaddish Baruch Hu gave us the man, a different kind of a bread, alechem min Hashemayim, to build faith, to build trust in Hashem, not to have something in the cupboard for later. That was the inui of the man. Pasuk in Parshas Ekev, hamachilcha, man bamidbar, leman anosecha, to cause inui by eating man. Kids are always so excited. I want the man to taste like a hot dog covered in raspberry jelly and gummy bears. Man sounds exciting. But the pasuk sounds like the man is an inui. It's a torture. It's a painful process. The Gemara Maseches Yuman Daf Ayin Dalet says, it's an inui to have only enough for today with nothing left in the closet. Not to have pas pasala, not to have any bread stored away for the end. You have to trust that the man's going to fall again tomorrow. And that was the faith building of leaving Mitzrayim. We have to learn to trust in Hashem, not to have bread stored away for later. And this is the process we're going through on Seder night. We start off very, very poor. And we're working toward, through the Makos, the Osos, the Mofsim, the tradition we're going to hear, the Divrei Torah tonight. The purpose is to build that faith. So by the end of the night, we take that stuff and we take that which was hidden away, and we could take it out, and we could eat it, and leave nothing behind. Weinberger said, we no longer call it at that point, Lach Ma'anya. You know what we call it? Afiku man. Take out the man. Afiku is Aramaic for take out. Now at this point, we can take out the man. And we can eat the man. And we can leave nothing else behind. Because now we're fully of faith. Now we're rich. We're rich in our amunah. We're rich in our belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who provided for us, who continues to provide for us, who will continue to provide for us. This is the transformative process of Magid, of the Seder, to start off with Lach Ma'anya, with the end game in mind, to be able to think about, by the end of this process, can we believe in Hashem to provide for all of our needs, where we're not going to have pas pasala, we're not going to have anything in storage. It ends off with the afiku man, with the taking out of that man, but at the beginning of this process, we're still expecting a wonderful night of the Divrei Torah, of the course in Amunah, that allows us to build that faith, to go from lechem oni to afikomen. The real mitzvah is for children to ask their parents questions, but my father likes to ask a question at the Seder every year. And part of tradition is I have to say over this question. My father always wants to know, how do we know the Baal Haggadah was a dentist? Because he encourages Haki Ashinov, more business for the dentist. That's what my father likes to say every single year. Such an unusual language when the Russia, one of the four sons, asked the question, Ma Havodah Zos Lachem. Okay, we can analyze the fact that he has certain language that seems to be kofer be'ikr, Lachem velo lo, lefisha hotzi es atvam in aklal. I get that part. Hake yashinav, knock out his teeth. What does that mean? The Torah Tumima in this Haggadah Baruch Sha'amar has a very clever understanding of what we're trying to tell the Rasha with that response. Hake yashinav. He says that the Rasha's real question is, Maha avodah hazos lachem. What are you doing? Look, you want to sit around and tell the story? Fine. Just sit there and think about what happened. You want to remember what God once did for us many, 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 many years ago? So you sit here and think about it. And for that matter, why are we doing any of these mitzvot tonight or any time of the year? There's an idea of connecting to God. So let's philosophize. Let's sit around and let's think about God. Does God really care about what kind of boxes I put on my arm or whether I ingest this flatbread tonight? Who cares? What are you doing? Does God really care about the things that you do? Shouldn't it be enough just to intellectualize and think about these ideas without having any avoda, having any meisim to do? And our response, says the Torah Tumima, is Hake Yashinav. We say to him, good question. You're probably looking forward to eating something tonight. That's probably why you're here. You don't want anything else we're doing tonight. You can't wait. You keep looking at the pages. Half are in English. Okay, so we're almost there. But when are we going to get to eat? When do we get to Shulchan Aruch? Why do you need to eat? Knock out your teeth. Let's say you don't have any teeth. Just sit there and let's philosophize about the meal. Isn't that enough for you to intellectually imagine food on a menu? Take a cookbook and have a good time. You don't like this book? Take that book. Isn't that enough for you? Hake Yashinav, why do you need teeth? You understand that to read a cookbook, to intellectualize everything, doesn't leave you feeling satisfied. And that's our response to you as well. Why are we doing all these things tonight and year round? Same reason we have to have teeth. It's not enough just to intellectually see ourselves as a distant reader of a story. We are living actually through this. We are actualizing it. We are manifesting something in poel, in action, that leaves us feeling satisfied. We need to internalize what's going on tonight. He is hotzi himself, lachem v'lo lo. He doesn't feel part of it. He feels removed. He feels you can just see it as an outsider. And we say, we're in it. That's kofar be'ikr. You wouldn't have been redeemed. You weren't part of that story. To be part of the story means to experientially live the story. And for that, you got to have teeth. For that, you got to ingest something. You got to infuse something tonight. And that's our goal for tonight. Not to make the mistake of the Rasha. We're going to tell the story and turn some pages and get to the meal. To realize what we're doing before the meal is we are ingesting. We are infusing ourselves in an experiential way with the lessons of Emunah, of the Kadosh Baruch Hu's Nisim and the flows for us. Master Begnus, Umesai Meshelech, we are going through all of it. We are letting all of it go through us. And in that way, we truly eat and enjoy and digest all the lessons of tonight. Every year when we read about the Makos and Sefer Shmos, I can't help but have a very cartoonish lens through how I see the story. That's my own fault. But it seems so cartoonish. Kadosh Baruch Hu has, this is going to be the plan that finally gets Pyro to give in. And for a while it looks like something supernatural is happening, and for some of them more than others, Pyro seems to be moved and inspired and perhaps even willing to offer up some degree of freedom. Before, oh, I had my fingers crossed. And then the next play comes and hits him again. It's like a Tom and Jerry kind of situation. You know, they get more elaborate and more cartoonish and more disastrous, and each time, he doesn't seem to learn. The Sforno points out on Chumash that the Torah doesn't necessarily use the word makkah, except for Pihikesi, by Makkas Bechoros. The Torah's main term is osos umofsim. These miracles are signs, they're wonders. They're miracles to make a point. They're etzba Elokim hi. Hashem is pointing at something. These miracles are pointing at Hashem. Some kind of demonstration, some kind of sign to get Paro's attention. But Paro seems so obtuse because regardless of what miracles are happening, he doesn't just ignore them. He looks for the smallest, most trivial, minute details to poke a hole and say, nope, not convinced. There are many examples, but I'll give you a few. At the end of Makas Tzvardeya, Paro has had enough of the loud noise, and Moshe comes to take him away, and Moshe says, Hispar Eli, challenge me. L'masai atir l'chad. When should I daven to take the frogs away? And Paro says, you think he'd say, right now they're jumping all over me, my nose, my toes, my bed, my head, to get them out of here right now. And Paro says, l'machar, I can take one more day of this. Why? The Ramban says, Paro had a suspicion that Moshe really wasn't speaking from Hashem. Moshe may have already known the frogs were going to leave anyway today. And Moshe was hoping Paro would say, I want them gone right now. So Paro said, uh-uh, I'm not going to fall for your trick. Like the person who called up for a magic trick? I'll take the bottom card. No, tomorrow. They can go away tomorrow. Moshe says, fine, as you wish. In Makas Dever, the Pasuk says, after the animals in Mitzrayim died, Yishlach Paro, Paro sent around word to see what had happened. V'hinei lo meis mimikne Yisrael ad achad. Which the Malbim says means, he found that there may have been one Jewish person, up to one, maybe one Jewish animal had died. And Paro said, I'm out. Forget it, the miracle is over. One Jewish animal died too. Throws away the whole miracle. Torah Tamima points out, after Makas Barad, Paro seems to be shaken. I have sinned. My people have sinned. You can go. And at the end, Bayar Paro, ki chadal hamatar v'habarad v'akolos, Paro sees that the hail and the rain and the thunder and lightning have stopped, and he hardens his heart. Says the Torah Tamima, Moshe didn't say anything about the rain stopping. Paro says, aha, you didn't say the rain was going to stop. Must be you're a liar. I changed my mind. What is he picking up on? The Vilna Gaon says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises there won't be any mashkes, no plague in the Jewish homes for Makas Bechoros, says the Vilna Gaon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was promising no Jew would die tonight, even of natural causes. You would expect a population of several million people, odds are someone should of old age pass away tonight, not on this night. So Paro shouldn't say, one of yours died too tonight. Aha! He sees millions of people on his side dying, all the firstborns, exactly as foretold, but one Jewish animal died, one Jewish person died. And perhaps most famously and most troublesome, Moshe has to warn Paro, Kachatos HaLeila, at around midnight, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will send this plague. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had said, at exactly midnight. Moshe couldn't say, Rashi quotes, exactly at midnight, because Paro would say, haha, he's off by a minute. Could you imagine? The Egyptian Paul Revere is running through, death is coming, death is coming. And some smug Paro is like, he's late. What are they using? A sundial? It's nighttime. How could they even know he's late? What are you talking about? Kachatzos? Exactly at midnight would confuse him? How obtuse is this guy? What's he hanging his hat on? Each miracle to say, nope, not convinced. What were these osos and mofsim, and why wasn't Paro convinced? Rabbi David Foreman from Aleph Beta has a beautiful mahalach to understand the real emunah, the real yisod trying to be conveyed throughout the entire story. Nowadays, our challenge when it comes to faith is it's hard for us to believe in the supernatural. It's hard for us to believe in the divine, of a power outside the forces of nature, beyond that which we can see and rationally explain. For us, seeing any one of these signs, or even close to anything like it, would have us convinced. Back then, that wasn't the challenge. People weren't struggling with the idea of believing in the supernatural. They had too many supernaturals. They had lots of gods, and they had lots of powers. All kinds of powers stepping on each other's toes and infringing on each other's rights, and everything was chaotic because you have to serve this god, and they all have different jurisdictions and different times. One's in charge of time, one's in charge of the weather, and one's in charge of this and that, and they just don't work together. And Moshe has this novel idea. There is one Hashem, there is one power above all these powers that coordinates everything. And Paro said, I've never heard of that. I believe in power. I believe in supernatural. I don't believe in that. The precision to coordinate everything, I don't believe in that. And so, Moshe makes it very clear, throughout their dialogue, this is going to be a lesson in precision. This is going to be a lesson, not just in power, but in ultimate power. The power above all other powers. And therefore, if you look at the dialogue, Moshe's response is not about, there is a God, it's that, ki ein kashem elokeinu. You should know, and everyone should know, that this power is the power above everything else, and you're going to see a precision like you've never seen before. And Paro says, when exactly this? Tomorrow, today, I want to know exactly when. I know things can happen, but I want to know when they're going to happen. And I want to know that this God can tell me exactly, with no holdups, because he has full carte blanche over everything, show me this is going to happen. So Amparo has the impression that, oh, it's not so precise. It wasn't just us. It was some of your animals, some of your people. God couldn't take away the lightning and the hail without taking away the rain. Maybe he's not as precise as you say he is. If one Jew dies too, maybe this power of yours is a power, but not as precise as you say. He can't be exactly on time. He can't exactly discriminate who is Jewish, who is not. And that's the dialogue back and forth. Those are the osos and mosim, not to prove that there are powers, but to prove in this supreme power. And Paro didn't get it. He made up his own loopholes, he made up his own excuses, he made up things that weren't true, because he wasn't looking to be convinced. So are we to declare the entire mission a failure? Of course not. Torah describes in Erev Rav many people who were convinced. A Yisro who hears about it and he wants to come. Also for the Jewish people. The Makos weren't just ways of punishing Mitzrayim or applying pressure to get us out. They were also sumofsim to teach us something too. And as we read about the Makos on Seder nights, Paro may have been obtuse, too obtuse to get it, too cartoonish to understand pain and understand precision. But it's not lost on us. We have the opportunity to recognize this is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu identifies himself by Matan Torah, not the God who created the world, but the God who proved his precision and his ultimate supreme power over all other powers. That's the one who gave us the Torah. That's the one who we're fortunate to have a relationship with. As you read about these makos and take out some wine, it's an opportunity to think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu not just as a power, but the supernatural power, collaborating with all the powers under one source, having the ultimate power, and we're so lucky to have a relationship with him.